Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome in to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here on a Tuesday night with Jack Heinrich, as always, because the Blackhawks had a late one last night in Seattle as they continued their season-long six-game road trip. But first things first, Jack, what is going on, man? And we are back for another week.
I don't know what day it is, but I know we had a show today. That's about it.
The day, we've gotten to the point in the calendar where all the days have blended together. I was talking to my parents last week, and it was like a Thursday, and my mom was like, oh, or I asked my mom, I was like, oh, so how was your weekend? And she's like, it's Thursday. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, it doesn't really matter to me. It's all the same in my brain.
Yeah, I feel that. I basically tell people I don't know what day it is. I just know where I need to be. And that's where I am right now.
No weekends when we're in season, which is great. Let's get to the Blackhawks. Starting a season-long six-game road trip last Thursday in Winnipeg, and we have hit the halfway mark of the road trip. And unfortunately for the Blackhawks, they are still searching for that first win. They are 0-2-1 through the first three games, losing 6-3 in Winnipeg on Thursday, 3-2 in overtime in Edmonton on Saturday night, and then, of course, last night a 3-1 loss to the Seattle Kraken. And I will say this, Jack, and I mentioned it on the pregame show yesterday, and I'm not trying to make any excuses, but I am trying to attempt to explain perhaps the Blackhawks hitting a little bit of a lull. I went back yesterday and I was breaking down the off days for the Blackhawks, and they have been on the ice for five straight days. So today is actually a scheduled off day. But prior to yesterday, or prior to today, the Hawks were on the ice for five straight days, and they were on the ice also. They either practiced, had a morning skate, and a game in eight of the last 9 days. And the one off day for the Blackhawks was a travel day to Winnipeg. So it really wasn't a true off day. And so I'm wondering, Jack, if the Hawks are really going to benefit from just hitting the reset button today. I'm not exactly what the team, I don't know what the team did today, but it was a much needed off day, unplug mentally. Nobody was at the rink. And I expect to see a fresher Blackhawks team on Wednesday night. But I wonder if just all the culminations of the practices, the travel, the games, the morning skates have caught up to the Blackhawks, and they just kind of needed a little reset here.
I heard you say that yesterday, and that was a good point. I think that last Sunday home game they had, they sent us the schedule for the week, and I turned to you. I'm like, they're really not going to have an off day? And you're like, I think they will, and I guess they didn't. So, yeah, I think today was much needed, and I think you make a good point saying that they should be ready to go tomorrow in Vancouver. And it is a lot of travel. I mean, you went out for part of it on this trip, and they're all the way out on the West Coast. And I guess it's nice that they're getting one of the West Coast trips out of the way early in the year. But, I mean, it is a beastly one. That was mainly the talking points on that last home game that Sunday, was going on the road for, what is it, 13 days or something like that?
And yeah, I think 12 days.
12 days, yeah. Six games. It reminds me of the circus trip. I think we talked about that a little bit a while ago. But, yeah, long road trip, a lot to travel, and a lot of these guys are young players getting their first taste. And I mean, the travel, I mean, it's as good as you can get when you're at the professional level, but when you're in college or junior, you're used to maybe busing and staying in a place or two, or just kind of going one day and then coming back home, or not playing six or three games in like every other day. So
right.
it is an adjustment. So hopefully they all had their feet up today in Vancouver, getting ready for tomorrow.
And Jack, this is a more compressed schedule than we typically right. see because of the Olympic break. That's going to knock out the NHL schedule in February for about 2.5 weeks. And so in order for the NHL to start the season on time and end the season on time and get all those games in, it just it makes for a lot. Fortunately for the Hawks, I don't think they've had a single back-to-back game yet. I'm looking at the schedule. They haven't had a single back-to-back game yet. So, and on that, from that perspective, that's a positive. But with Jeff Blashill and a new coaching staff trying to instill a new system to this young group, practice time is a necessity. And so the Blackhawks haven't been able to really take advantage of any rest days, because it's not like, you know, the Blackhawks during the dynasty era. I remember when there was that lockout in the 2012-13 season when the Hawks went on that historic run in the regular season. There were like 40-something games. Hawks were the President's Trophy winners. I think during that season, the Hawks practiced like maybe three times, like the entire season. Yeah. And it was like they didn't need to, because all of those players had played together. It was Kane, Taves, Hossa, Sharp, Keith, Seabrook, Jalmerson, Crawford, Saad, Andrew Shaw, all those guys, they just showed up to training camp or whatever the first, I think it was actually, there might have not even been a training camp. It might have even just been like, hey, show up to the first regular season game. And like the Hawks didn't need to practice because they're like, we've been together for so long and we know the coaching staff and all that. So rest was a necessity. But for a rebuilding team, and if, when you have a new coaching staff, the Hawks practicing is important because they all have to get on the same page. But at some point, the rest is going to become as important as well. And so I'm curious to see how the Blackhawks are going to manage that moving forward. It might look like shaving off, you know, making optional morning skates, or practice will be shorter and morning skates will be longer, or no practice days at all, and then you extend the morning skates and treat the morning skates as like a mini practice. And so we'll see what the Blackhawks do, but it feels like the guys certainly needed a mental reset and physical reset today in Vancouver.
Yeah, and looking, it looks like their first back-to-back is the 20th and 21st of this month, and then really after they come home from Detroit, they only have one road game, and it's on the back-to-back. They play Seattle at home and then go to Buffalo. So they'll be home a bunch, too, so it makes that a little easier to practice when you're at home. You drive to the rink, and it's a little quicker day than being out of your own element. So hopefully they can gear up for the final three, and then they got some being sleeping in their own beds coming up here to end November.
For sure. All right, let's get to a positive from yesterday. Oliver Moore gets called up by the Blackhawks, and the official announcement went out yesterday morning, but the actual call to Oliver that he was getting called up came on Sunday, and it was shortly before the Rockford IceHogs were about to play in a game in Grand Rapids, and Oliver Moore gets the tap on the shoulder saying, hey kid, you're going up, pack your stuff, you gotta hop on a flight to Seattle. Side note, Jack, I don't know what exactly he packed with him to Seattle, because if they were on the road, I think it was a quick one-off trip in Grand Rapids, so I don't even know what Oliver Moore has with him in Seattle joining for the final four games of their road trip for the Blackhawks. This poor guy might have to go on a shopping spree.
I was going to say, he might have to go out. Maybe that's what he did today.
that's probably how he spent his off day, because I'm not sure what kind of luggage he had. It was probably like an overnight bag. But it was nice to see Oliver Moore get called up. He had been playing really well in Rockford, and if you rewind all the way back to training camp, Jack, he really shined. Actually, maybe even rewind just a little bit before that, the rookie showcase in Minnesota. He played in the first game, scored the overtime winner. I thought he was really noticeable, and then that strong start carried over into his training camp, and I thought he had a really strong showing, and he probably could have been on the opening night roster. Like a strong argument could have been made that he belonged there. But the Blackhawks wisely decided, let's send him down to Rockford so that way he's not just surviving at the NHL. Like maybe he gets off to a hot start, but then maybe what if he hits a wall? Then you have to send him down to Rockford. Then it becomes a storyline, and then it's when do you call him back up? And so the Hawks were like, let's just send him down to Rockford. And it was a discussion because Landon Slaggart had suffered an injury in the preseason finale that originally wasn't supposed to knock him out for a couple games. Like the team seemed optimistic that he was going to be fine. But when we landed in Florida on that Sunday, the Hawks practiced the next day, and Ryan Green was on the ice for practice. And I was like, wait a second, what's Ryan Green doing here? And so it meant Slaggart ended up getting placed on injured reserve. And so Ryan Green was originally supposed to start the year in Rockford. he gets called up. And I remember there was like a discussion. It's like, why not Oliver Moore? Like, why shouldn't he have been the call up? And I think the Hawks, because Ryan Green is maybe a year ahead of the development of Oliver Moore, because Green was drafted in the 2022 draft and had 3 full years of college. He was probably more pro ready and to slide into more of a bottom six role. Whereas with Oliver, the Hawks wanted to develop him into a top line player, play in the first line in Rockford, top power play, top penalty kill. And he did exactly that in Rockford, puts up a point per game, scores 6 goals in the 9 games. It was among the AHL leaders prior to the call-up. And so he gets his shot in Seattle because of the Jason Dickinson injury, and Landon Slaggart gets reassigned to Rockford because he's had a slow first month of the season. And so whether or not this is going to be permanent, a permanent call-up for Oliver Moore remains to be seen, but he's going to have every opportunity to prove, just like Ryan Green has done, to prove that he belongs and he can potentially run with this opportunity. And so I'm excited to see what Oliver does with this opportunity. And he got off to a really good start last night, Jack, with 4 shot attempts in the first period alone, 2 shots on goal, ends up finishing with 16:29 of ice time, which was all at even strength. He had no power play, no penalty kill time. Only Bedard and Tyler Bertuzzi had more ice time at even strength. And I was even looking deeper at the numbers. Oliver Moore logged 23 shifts in Seattle last night. Connor Bedard had 22. So Moore had one more shift than Connor Bedard in the game last night, because they felt like Oliver Moore could provide a spark at even strength. So I was impressed. It was a strong first showing for Oliver Moore, Jack, but I'm excited to see what he's going to do with this opportunity and prove whether he can keep this a permanent call-up for him.
You wanted him to be confident. That's what he did coming out yesterday. And I mean, it was a whirlwind too. You could have understood if he was a little tired with all the travel, but he came out, like you said, the 4 shot attempts in the first period, and you could see him flying around the ice using that speed, and hopefully he can take this opportunity. And I remember talking on one of our first Blackhawks Lives when they sent him down, and we were kind of saying like, well, yeah, he could have made the team, but like, it's good for him to go to Rockford. And he went down there and took it in stride and played really well. And it was like basically the next man up when they had an injury. So hopefully we can see him continue to do that. And I think it shows the confidence Jeff Blashill had, like you said, with his ice time over 16 minutes and up there among the forwards. And I mean, the Hawks are really, they were fast before, and now they're really fast with adding Oliver Moore.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of speed on this roster, youth, talent, speed. I mean, the Hawks are going to be a really challenging team to deal with if you're in the opposition, trying to handle all the legs that are on this Blackhawks roster. And especially when Oliver Moore, like I was mentioning, he didn't get any power play or penalty kill time. And I think in the penalty kill specifically is an area that his speed could pop more than in other areas, because he could be a threat to generate shorthanded chances. That's certainly an area that he's going to get integrated in. It didn't sound like the Blackhawks wanted to give him penalty kill time last night in Seattle, because Rockford plays a little bit different structurally. I know Jeff Blashill and Jared Nightingale, the Rockford IceHogs head coach, they are in cohesion when it comes to the even strength, like the neutral zone, forecheck, the defensive zone structure, all of that system. But it sounds like the penalty kill is a little bit different. So I think the Hawks, because they had an optional morning skate yesterday before the game, they didn't want to throw Oliver into a situation where he wasn't exactly sure of the system. And so I expect Oliver Moore to participate in the morning skate tomorrow in Vancouver, maybe get a look on the penalty kill, take a few reps, go through some of the video sessions, and then he might get some PK time tomorrow in Vancouver to kind of integrate him. But the other thing that I really liked hearing out of Oliver Moore is he said when he got sent to Rockford at the beginning of the season, Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson told him, like, the message to Oliver was, make us make a spot for you. Like, go down there, play with the IceHogs, play so well down there that we can't ignore what you're doing down there, and we have to create a spot for you in the NHL, at the NHL roster, where it's like, okay, he's performing so well down there. Like, we got to get this guy to Chicago. Now, I know that those weren't exactly the circumstances of Oliver getting called up in this one, because it would be, because Jason Dickinson got injured again, and because Landon Slaggart has had a rough little go the first few weeks of the season. So it was kind of a, okay, might as well just give Oliver Moore a shot. But it certainly, Oliver held up his end of the bargain as far as getting off to a great start. Now let's see if this earlier than expected call-up can get turned into Moore playing himself into a full-time role with the Blackhawks this early in the season.
That's what you're hoping for, is the young players forcing their hand. And we talked about it last week with Lucas Reichel getting traded. They have a lot of these young forwards waiting in the wings, and there's a ton of them on the way, still not even in Rockford yet, that we've been talking about throughout the year on the prospect updates. So, he's got a spot now, and he's got to earn it. I think another one of Jeff Blashill's things say is you got to bring it every day or something like that, and you got to do it every day. So hopefully he's got a little bit more comfort going for him tomorrow, and he could just keep being a progressive and using that speed to his advantage.
For sure. All right, we got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. We got Mike Palm from Circa that's going to join us next. We do our bi-weekly check-in to see some NHL odds around the league, some of the league trending items. And so Mike is going to join us next. You're listening to 720 WGN. Welcome back to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. And speaking of Circa, let's go to the phone line and bring in our guy, Mike Palm, the VP of Operations for Circa, for our bi-weekly check-in. Mike, what is going on tonight?
Well, just another great night of, the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday NHL slates are always terrific. So we're having some fun watching these games. I've been focused on the Mammoth at the Sabres, which has been a defensive struggle so far.
Selfishly, I wish I was there at the stadium swim when they had that frozen frenzy when all 16 games were going on. That feels like I could have been a happy man posted up poolside.
Yeah, I know we did, and the Knights, the Knights wanted us to have all screens on hockey and volume, and it's a little tough only because it was game four of the World Series as well, but we did have every hockey game on. There was never more than nine at once, but we had all the hockey games on, and I wish they'd do more of that, and stagger those start times, and you maybe even start it earlier, maybe like 3 Central, and be able to. But it was a fun night. I like what the NHL is trying to do. I much prefer that to this ludicrous stadium series that they continue on with, having a game in Miami. The next one's going to be at Jerry World in Dallas. Enough already. The ratings on those stadium series games have dropped more than 70% in the last 4 years. I think everybody's sort of over it now. You've been at all these different venues. I'd rather them do creative things like the frenzy.
Yeah, it feels like those outdoor games have gotten watered down to a TV standpoint, and now it's just basically like for the local teams that are hosting. Like it's less about the aesthetics on TV and more about, all right, this is an outdoor game that the entire city could get behind for a weekend. But I agree with you.
If they want to do one a year on New Year's Eve in a cold weather place, okay. But they've now just trying to create something where there's nothing left.
Right. All right, let's get to some hockey talk. I'm looking at the Eastern Conference, Mike, and the first place team has 18 points, and the team in dead last in the Eastern Conference is at 13. There are 5 points separating the one seed from the 16 in the Eastern Conference, and it's a 1 point separation from the second, or I should even say from the first wild card spot to the last wild card spot. First wild card spot to the last place team in the Eastern Conference. I can't remember seeing such parity this early on. What have you seen from that, and how surprising is that? Because you're not seeing the same thing in the West.
No. Everybody. Well, the good thing is all the fan bases are still in it, right?
Right.
Nobody can complain we're out of it for Thanksgiving. And I'm talking about Buffalo. Buffalo showed a lot of fight as well. I mean, I think they are markedly improved. Pittsburgh got off to a great start, although they yacked a 3-goal lead last night in Montreal. I still think New Jersey's probably the class to the East, but everybody's in there. And these teams that haven't made the playoffs for a few years are certainly a lot. I think the Blackhawks caught Tampa Bay at the right time, right, when they were sitting at last in the East and
right.
before they've gone, this tear where what have they won, like, 6 out of 8 or whatever that Tampa Bay has been on. The Blackhawks caught them at the right time, certainly. I think for Cooper's guys, they sort of used the first 8, 9, 10 games of the year at their spring training.
You mentioned the Pittsburgh Penguins. Oh, man, they were up 3-0 last night. They squander it, lose in regulation, 4 unanswered goals in the third period. If they won that game, they would be sitting at 20 points. It would be sole possession of first place in the entire NHL. I honestly don't know what to make of them and whether they are contenders or pretenders, and maybe not contenders from a standpoint of a Stanley Cup, but contenders, and it's like, are they going to hover around a playoff spot all year, or is water going to eventually find its level? What's your feeling on the Penguins as we get closer and closer? It's like the body of work is starting to grow where it's like, maybe it's not a fluke?
It's funny, Charlie. We offered in October most points in the month. Like, what's become a very popular bet in baseball is most wins in a month. Because baseball's such a long season. We offered it for October, and our guy, Jeff Davis, is our main hockey guy, put a lot of work into it. We didn't write that much on it, so we decided not to do it moving forward. But Pittsburgh won it. They had the most points in the month of October, and they were 34-1. I mean, that was their price.
Oh, my.
Remember, they had the third shortest odds for least points for the season. And part of the reason that I bought this New Jersey-Colorado Stanley Cup final was I thought that Crosby might get dealt because Pittsburgh would be bad, and Colorado would be a team that would go get him. I was looking at postseason awards yesterday, and this was actually yesterday afternoon before they yacked the lead, but the new coach in Pittsburgh, Hughes, still 20-1 for the Jack Adams. I was actually, it's still in my mind. I didn't make the bet yesterday. But if you think this team is going to be around and competitive, those are pretty good odds right now. And with the low expectations, he doesn't have to try to compete with an expectation of, you got to have a one seed in one of the conferences or win your division for sure. I do have Quinville at 12-1 from before the season started, and I'm still bullish on my Ducks futures.
Let's go to Anaheim right now because they're sitting in the second spot right now in the Pacific. But based on a points percentage, they would be first in the Pacific right now, tied with Vegas. That feels like a team that, because of the new coach in Joel Quenneville, it feels like he has elevated the ceiling of that group. And I like the makeup of their team a little bit more than in years past. It just feels like they're more of a tougher team to play against. They have a good mix of young players and veterans. Do you expect Anaheim to be competing in a playoff spot all season long, or is it a year too early to think they could keep this up over the course of the long term?
I would have said that they were a year away before they hired Quinville.
Yep.
Harry Quinville, he finally got out of his purgatory from the situation with the Blackhawks. Hiring Quinville escalated the time frame for me, and they were, 3-1 even to make the playoffs and 150-1 to win the cup. And I'm going to tell you this. One day, Dostal will win a Vezina. It won't be with this team this year because they don't defend well enough in front of them. Dostal right now is the top 5 goalie in the NHL, and nobody will talk about that because his goals against will never be that great because of the way this team plays. But they're fun, right? They're on the gas pedal right out of the gate. Just like San Jose. San Jose's a fun team to watch because they go at it for 60 minutes. They're committed to going forward and not necessarily defending. But they're fun games, and when they've met, they've been really high-scoring games, the Sharks and the Ducks. But I'm bullish on the Ducks. I mean, they've had some good scheduling spots, and they've taken advantage of them, but they haven't shied away from anybody yet. So I think they're going to be in the thick of it, at least with a fighter's chance once they get to the playoffs.
I'm right there with you with Dostal. I think one of the things, too, that hurts a team like Anaheim is they play the late games in the Midwest, and so you don't, like, the average fan isn't staying up 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock Eastern to watch, you know, the Anaheim Ducks play. You know, it's not, they're not in the Vegas territory or the Edmonton territory where they're must watch TV yet. And so once Anaheim takes those strides as a team over the next couple of years, and Dostal is a big reason why, you know, behind their success, I think then he's going to play his way onto the radar. But I agree with you. Yeah, I think he's going to be a stud goaltender.
I give you two more postseason bets to consider right now, or year-long bets.
Okay, let's hear it.
Shifley, you can still get Shifley at 50-1 for Hart. He was 500-1 before the season. He's leading the league in points and desperately wants to be on the Olympics. Don't forget, in the whole course of this, the break for the Olympics in February in Italy, can play a part in voters' minds. I don't care that it's not in the NHL season. I think that will still carry some weight what happens in the Olympics. And the other one is Logan Thompson. He's 12-1 for Vezina. By all rights, he should be the Canadian starting goaltender in Italy, and I believe that Canada will win the gold over Bennington. Bennington played decently last night in that comeback win over Edmonton, but he's had a bad year. And I know that Bruce Cassidy hates Thompson. That's why they traded him from the Knights. He's done nothing wrong since he's gotten to Washington. He's playing a lot better than Bennington right now. He should be the Canadian goalie. I don't know if Cassidy, who's an assistant coach to Cooper on Team Canada, will keep him out of that role. And I think 12-1 is fair odds for Thompson to Vezina right now.
I like that. I'm honestly not even sure why exactly Vegas didn't buy into him a little bit more. Maybe you know a little bit more than I do, but I it feels like he was a really good fit there, and he was just starting to burst onto the scene. And now that he's been getting more of the rope in Washington, I mean, 9.35 save percentage, 1.51 goals against average. I know he's got three regulation losses, but I agree. Like that wouldn't be, especially if he handles more of the workload moving forward, and it's less of a 50-50 split as it was last year. I think he could certainly play his way into that conversation.
He's a young guy that likes to party and stay out late and gamble and all that, and Cassidy hated that. I mean, you know, they could have got, the trade stunned a lot of people because, first of all, he's at an earlier point in his career than Adin Hill and probably has a higher ceiling, and you could have got a lot more for Adin Hill after they won the Cup, right? There was never a better time to move Adin Hill, but they made that decision. I'll give you one more, and this is not a big odds thing. But if Cale Makar doesn't get hurt, he's going to win the Norris Trophy. It's like betting Wimby for Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. And you can get him at minus 120. But that's really just it's minus 120 that he doesn't have a major injury.
No question. Even Cale, I think Cale Makar, so I have a vote for the NHL Awards. And last year, I think I put Cale Makar either two or three on my Hart Trophy ballot, let alone Norris. He is so good, and he just doesn't get enough love when it comes to the Hart Trophy conversation. But it feels like every year, the Norris is always going to be his to lose unless he has some weird season that, you know, either he gets injured or he just goes so far off the rails that somebody else steals it. But I'm right there with you. It feels like it's always going to be his award to lose in the foreseeable future. He's just that good.
He's good, and he stands out above the field, and you're right. He's going to be a Hart finalist in a lot of years as well.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks as always for the insight. I love doing these biweekly check-ins around the NHL, and we'll talk again soon.
Charlie, let's hope the Blackhawks can get a couple times out of it.
I know we're still searching for that first win on this season-long six-game road trip, but we're still only 2 points out of a playoff spot, so we're right there. But there was some early season excitement; it hasn't necessarily worn off just yet. But hopefully, they get the train back on the tracks.
All right, Charlie, be good. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, awesome, great to talk to you, Mike. That is Mike Palm, the Vice President of Operations for Circa. Always enjoy our conversations. We got one more break to get to, and then we're going to wrap up Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Coming up next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich with you here. To close out the show, Jack, I feel like we have to revisit Saturday in Edmonton. Game 7 of the World Series is going on between the Dodgers and Toronto Blue Jays while the Blackhawks-Oilers game was going on. And so I was in Edmonton calling the game with John. You were back in the studio doing the pre and post. And so you could, like, you could hear our feed going on. Like we were, we were ahead of you guys, correct?
Oh yeah.
All right.
I don't know if we're streaming here or what, but you were way ahead.
Okay. So Edmonton time, the local first pitch for game seven was 6 o'clock. The puck drop for Blackhawks Oilers was at 8:11. So the end of the World Series game was coinciding with the beginning of the Blackhawks Oilers game, and they were airing on the Jumbotron the start of the game from when the gates opened to when warm-up started. And then the first period happens, and I think they're like sporadically playing, you know, or updating the game. We go into the intermission, and in the second period, because I think at that point it was like, it was in the ninth inning, and so the Rogers place ends up putting a split screen of the live arena feed, which was the main feed, but then in the bottom right corner was the Game 7 World Series game, and it was fairly distracting. Well, first off, for us calling the game, I actually enjoyed it because I was like, I'm really invested in what the outcome of this game is. So right. I kept just like looking up and right. But as a player, there were players sitting on the bench that were looking up watching this game. And at one point in the second period, there's a clip that went viral. The puck is behind the Blackhawks net and the crowd just completely erupts because they thought the Blue Jays had won the World Series at when it was the bases loaded, one out, play at home. And because the screen is in the bottom right, it was pretty small. You couldn't exactly tell if it was out or safe. And so the fans in the arena thought the Blue Jays just won the World Series. The players on the bench and on the ice are kind of confused as to what just happened. And I know we were texting back and forth, but when the third period started, there was zero mention of the game. It wasn't on the Jumbotron anymore. And I had a theory that someone from Edmonton said something, like whether it was the coaching staff, whether it was the management, and they said, turn this game off because it's distracting our players. And then, Jack, we hear Connor McDavid's post-game comments on them airing the video board. And he said he found it really distracting. He said it was bizarre. And I'm like, that's it. It was Connor McDavid and the players that did not like this. And so that is the reason why they took it off for the third period. But it was a really unique experience being in the building for it. But it was, I can't imagine how distracting that would have been for some of the players that were sitting on the bench, just looking up and just watching the game in the middle of their own game.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's a little different if we're monitoring because it's part of the sports update and whatnot and being sports fans. But for the players, I bet it is. I think they talked to Spencer Knight after, and he didn't really, you know how locked in he is, didn't realize the World Series was going on. And he just, or he kind of knew what was going on, but he's like, they're in our end. And then all of a sudden, everyone started screaming. I was like, whoa, what's going on? So it was weird, but it was fun. And I mean, Game 7s anywhere get people's attention. So. It was definitely one of the top Game 7s ever, too. So,
oh.
And it went long. Like you said, it started 2 hours before our game started, and it ended in the third period. So it was a long game.
I went back and looked at that Spencer Knight after his comments. I went back and looked at the play of the crowd erupting, and it sure did look like Spencer Knight kind of flinched just a quick second. And I'm like, that is very un-Spencer Knight-like because he is this stoic, calm demeanor. And so the fact that it might have even thrown him off is really impressive because, I mean, that was tough. All right, that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Our next show is Tuesday, November 11th at 7 p.m. We'll talk to you then.